Merry Christmas, everyone! It is draft week. Oh my goodness, we've been waiting, and now it's finally time to celebrate the new presents the Chicago Bears and Chicago Bears fans are going to have later this week. It is Christmas week, so to speak, and here at the Bar Room, we are going to provide tons and tons of coverage. Let's take a look at our little calendar here. Today, of course, Gabriel Talks Football. Swifty will be Greg's special guest. Tomorrow, Bear Their Souls with a special guest from CBS Sports, Glenn Morgan. He's going to help us break down the draft. On Wednesday, we will have two Draft on Tap specials. One, an interview with Nick Baumgarten from The Athletic. That'll be Wednesday afternoon. And then Wednesday evening, Danny Shimon will interview Matt Schaldman, and we'll also look at some of Danny's thoughts about how this first round is going to turn out. On Thursdays, John Buffon will be back. This Thursday, John Buffon will be back with the Bears, the draft, and day one coverage. The analyst, Danny and Jordan Silvera, will anchor that on Friday. I will anchor with Danny and Jordan, and we will also have Gabriel Talks Football at 9 a.m. Greg will review the Thursday action from the NFL, and particularly the Bears. On Saturday, it's the same routine. Gabriel Talks Football at 9 a.m. and then we'll do wall-to-wall coverage of Chicago Bears draft and the NFL draft. So that's our schedule. Let me bring in the man of the hour. His name is Greg Gabriel. Greg, how are you, my friend?
I'm good. You're right. It is Christmas. That's what we used to call it, you know, for scouts, because it's like you do all your work for this week.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, right now, this time of the week, you're starting to get impatient. It's like, you know, come on. We've been doing this work for months and months and months. Let's get it over with. Because you still don't. You can have your plans, and that's what goes on now. You're discussing what, you know, your final scenarios. You're not really talking about players, more of strategy. What are we going to do? Your game plan, so to speak. I always compare it this way. You know, you during the week for a football game, they put in a game plan for the week. You practice it Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, and then you go through that game plan on Sunday during the game. Well, it's the same thing with the draft. You put that plan together in the days leading up to the draft, and it's just executing that plan on draft weekend. So they can still go out and visit players. No players can come see them, but they can go out and see players. They can go out and work out players up until Wednesday. Wednesday's the last day you can do anything. After that, Thursday, you can call guys, obviously, anytime you want, but you can't go see them and you can't go work them out.
The Washington Commanders late last week had all three of the next tier quarterbacks after Caleb visit at the same time. I've never heard of that happening before. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I see nothing wrong with it. In fact, you know, their new GM said that's the way they did it in San Francisco. So, you know, it was something he brought with him. He found it successful in San Francisco. You want to see how they interact. In fact, that brings up a thing. You know, you got there was a tweet out this morning or a post out this morning on X about how the front office, when Caleb was here a few weeks ago for his top 30 visit, front office didn't take him out to dinner. They had him go out to dinner with players. So I saw one take and said, well, Poles is a genius. He wants Caleb to see what the culture is. And I took it, you know, when I heard that, I took it a totally different way. It's, to me, it was, how are these vets? Because a lot of the vets that were there were people that were outspoken, to say the least, about Justin Fields being traded. I think, mm-hmm. you know, the idea of it was, let's get them to know Caleb, to buy into Caleb.
Makes sense. I got a tough question for you, Greg. I probably should have told you. I'm going to ask you this question before we met. But I just spoke.
I don't like it. I won't answer.
Okay, good. I just spoke with Nick Baumgartner of The Athletic, and I asked him for his thoughts on Caleb Williams, and he called him, you know, a word that you don't like to use for any prospects, a generational talent. And he added that he thinks that traditionalists in the scouting community and football organizations were upset with Caleb because he wanted to make changes that were already baked into the CBA, things that he couldn't change, but he was talking about it and asking about it and wanted to, you know, introduce a new era of the relationship between a player and an NFL team. What are your thoughts about that? You know, you've talked to people in the community, and so I wanted to get your take on it.
Well, I guess it's fact that they hired his team hired an advisor to look into the idea of, do we got to accept that slot at that number one slot in the rookie pool and see if they can go about it? And they can't. It's part of a contract. It's part of a negotiated contract between the players' union and the league and the league's ownership. It's been signed. It's been ratified. It's ratified by the players. So it's basically law, for lack of a better word. It's not getting changed. The only way it can get changed is when the contract is up. Then you'd have to make a change at that point. But you can't make a change midstream because one player wants to do that. You know, he's going to get, and I don't know what the contract figure that Byron Young got last year, but it was a lot of money. Mm-hmm. You know, he's going to get significantly more than any other player in this draft. And it's going to be more than Young got last year because the salary cap went up. So, you know, it might be, and I'm throwing a dart at the wall, it might be $7-8 million more total, maybe even $10 million total, you know, over the course of the contract. That's a lot of money. So, and the thing about it too is with a rookie, excuse me, a rookie first round pick, it's a totally guaranteed contract. He's seeing every single penny of that the day he puts pen to paper. So, yeah, I'm not going to say people were upset about it. It's more like, is this what we got to look forward to? Okay, this is one thing. What's going to be the next? Is there going to be a next? You know, he refused to take the medical at the combine. First player, and we're talking over 13,000 players, to not take a medical, and took one, you know, for the Chicago Bears. Now, in saying that, to be fair, every team had his medical records from USC. They had that going into the combine. You know, the trainers from each school send the medical records to the league. The scouts used to have to get that on their own. And then, you know, because of the HIPAA laws and stuff, they wanted to keep it more private. So the schools that never don't give it to the scouts anymore. They send it to the league. The league distributes it to the trainers of each team. So you have all that information. What you do with the medical is, you know, let's say a guy has a surgery. You want to find out about that surgery. If he had a knee surgery, a shoulder surgery, an ankle surgery, whatever, you know, you want to get an MRI on the joint. You got to check the stability of the joint, check for any arthritic conditions, things like that. So that stuff's important. Now, as far as we know, he never got hurt in college. He might have had a pulled muscle or something, but there was never any surgeries, never any orthopedic problems. So a lot of that stuff, he was already good to go. It was really just checking the blood work and some of the other stuff just to see if there's something hidden. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the NFL, for lack of a better term, the NFL practices communism. Everything is shared.
I've said that for a long time.
So, socialism, communism, however you want to call it.
Exactly.
And in this case, it wasn't. The Bears were the only team that got anything. Yeah. You know, so
it's an interesting perspective, to say the least.
I've been saying that for years, to tell you the truth. It's using that term, you know, the NFL is a communistic society.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, there's revenue sharing.
They share revenue and everything else.
Absolutely. They, you know, when you talk about parity, that's the league's intent with a lot of their rules. They want parity. That sounds like socialism to me.
all for one and one for all.
Yeah, but it's amazing that even with, you know, that type of system, they still put out a very entertaining product. And we don't see the dynasties like we used to, but we still see the cream rise to the top. You know, the Kansas City Chiefs are clearly the most dominant team. You can call them a dynastic team, or if they win one more championship, you can't deny that's a dynasty. And so, you know, the best run organizations are always going to rise to the occasion, no matter what kind of system.
It gets down to, you get the quarterback, you got a chance.
There you go. There you go.
You get the quarterback and you have a good offensive line, you got a good defensive line, you got a chance. Now, and a perfect example of that, because probably 90% of the fans want the Bears to take a wide receiver at number 9. Well, Andy Reid, where Ryan Poles came from Kansas City, they never take a wide receiver in the first round. And if you look at what they did before last season, they got rid of most of their receivers. And different ones come in, a lot of top ones. And it didn't make a damn bit of difference.
It was amazing. That first game of the season, the Chiefs lose to the Detroit Lions on a nationally televised season opening game. And everybody was spelling doom for the Chiefs because their receivers were dropping balls. Mahomes was Mahomes, but he didn't have to cast around that. Unbelievable.
It fixed itself. Where's our man Swifty? He should be coming out any second.
He should be, because you told him about 10 or 15 minutes.
Yeah, and he sent me a thing that he was going to be, you know, I said about 10 after. So he should be on any second.
Evie says that he had another show scheduled for 11. So we'll see.
I told him 11 Central.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, it's 11 Central, which is 12. I said, just come out at 11:10 Central, which was a few minutes ago, and he put a star there. So
he's on his way. He just posted. We can't wait for you to be on. And lots of people in the chat are wondering, you know, where is Swifty? But whenever you get here, you're more than welcome. And I got a question for you regarding the quarterbacks. We're talking about Caleb. So who on your board, so to speak, is the number 2 quarterback in this draft?
You know, I don't know if I really have one, because they all got different qualities. And so it's going to, like, what's Washington going to do? Well, everybody thought that the bet was it's going to be Daniels. Well, then it comes out Daniels might not even want to play there. Now, that doesn't mean anything. You can take him anyway. But you know, when they had all these people in and they talked to them, maybe they, you know, there's something about what they do, how Daniels processes, you know, what's the fit, the best fit between the person and the scheme. Is there a big difference between Daniels and May and JJ? Reality is no. JJ doesn't have the stats, but that's not JJ's fault. That's what he was, the system he played in at Michigan, and they were very successful. They had an undefeated season, 15-0, won a national championship, and in the 2 years he was a starter, they only lost one game. So you can't fault the system. The system worked. But had you put him in a different system, his numbers, I guarantee you, would have been a lot better. So I think people that want to criticize his numbers, it's like, hey, he plays in what he plays in. And you're looking, when you're scouting, you're looking at the traits, what he can do, what he can't do. Can he make some of these throws? Can he process? Can he read a defense? You know, things like that. And it is what it is as far as the offense is doing, what the scheme is doing, what they're being asked to do. It's how does he perform?
Yeah.
Does he have the ability to take what he did in college and then take it to the next level in the NFL? So, you know, it wouldn't shock me at all if he ended up being 2 and Daniels goes 3 and May goes as the fourth quarterback, or you reverse it and May goes number two. Any, you know, who knows? And then somebody said, well, what difference does it make? And I said, exactly. I said, really? I don't care. If the Bears got the guy they wanted.
Right.
So, you know, so it doesn't matter. It's they can take whoever they want. Right. It's like, okay, who's going to be there at nine? And, you know, then that's going to be, now I want to wait for Swifty to get into that part of the discussion, but that's you know, do they take a pick or they trade down? And I'll wait, you know, for Swifty before we get into that.
And he's ready to come in, but I want to ask you one quick question before we do that, because Bear Truth 9 asked it a little while ago. He wants to know from you, Greg, do you think that Atlanta will lose their first-round pick for tampering? Or do you think that perhaps they might have Atlanta and Minnesota Vikings flip picks? Or what kind of a penalty do you think? And I guess, your body language is saying you don't know, but what do you think they should do to the Atlanta Falcons for allegedly tampering?
Okay, the way you're presenting that is they're guilty. Are mm-hmm. they? We don't know that. We don't know what happened. You read Pro Football Talk, and Florio's got a guilty before the trial. You know, and he's an attorney. He should know better. You know, so let's find out what they have. I know the agent involved. The agent said there was no tampering. Now, in saying that, he's referring to talking contract. He flat out told me that on the day the negotiation period started, at that day, so that's a Monday. Free agency mm-hmm. open on Wednesday. On that Monday, he had not discussed money with any team, including the Minnesota Vikings, for a contract for Cousins for this year. Now, could Cousins have had conversations on his own? Yeah.
He did admit to having conversations. We don't know whether it was about money or something, but he did admit with talking to people from the Falcons organization prior to that legal tampering period.
Right. Now, here's the caveat to that. And I'm just trying to put everything out as far as what's legal and what's not legal. There's nothing wrong with him talking to anybody from any team. Just like I can talk to you whenever I want. You know, when I could call guys from another team and talk to them whenever I want. Nothing wrong with that. It's what was said. If they're mm-hmm. talking about, well, we want you to do this, we want you to do that, we're going to bring in this. Now it becomes a case of tampering. And so, and if it's a case of Kirk Cousins says, hey, that's my wife's hometown, I'd really let it go there. Well, now you're starting to cross the line here, you know, but I don't know what happened. You don't know what happened. I guarantee you Florio doesn't know what happened, but Florio's trying to get clicks. So he's going to put out, you know, whatever he wants. So it's like he's got the OJ thing going. Who cares what happened 30 years ago? You know, it's over and the guy's dead.
Yes, he is. Well, here's somebody who is alive and well. His name is Swifty from the Swift Sports Network. You are muted, just to let you know, and you are the man setting the fashion trend, getting those clicks with great reporting and opinion on the Chicago Bears. Swift, how are you, my friend? Man,
I'm doing good. Good to see you, Greg. Always wanted to chat with you, so it's a pleasure being here. Honor is all mine today. Ready to talk football. I actually took down, I had a Justin Fields painting up. It's gone. You guys can't call me Justin Fields only guy anymore. We got a Bears neon light, and we're debuting it on Barroom because you're the king of the neon lights. So
thank you very much. That is awesome.
So we were talking, you know, before you came on, you know, there's that report on X earlier today about when Caleb came to town, he didn't go out to dinner with the front office. He went out to dinner with some players. And then I saw one response to that was, you know, Poles is a genius because he wanted Caleb to see what the culture was like and to see if he could buy into the culture. My take was a total opposite, because most of the players involved were players that were outspoken with JF being traded. Mm-hmm. My take was, no, this was about them getting to know Caleb and seeing if they were going to buy into Caleb.
I like that. And it gives them a chance to, because even when DJ Moore said what he said, when he said someone asked if the players coming out of college were better, and DJ said clearly, he said they're not better. And he was referring to Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels and Drake May, but he doesn't know those guys personally. He knew Justin Fields. That was his teammate. They had a bond. So I do like that Poles is giving DJ a chance to actually get to know who Caleb Williams is.
I think DJ was one of the guys involved.
Yeah, DJ was the guy who probably was the most outspoken, other than maybe, I know Brisker was on, he's on Twitter a lot, always saying stuff, and then other people like Jalen Johnson.
Yeah, Jalen Johnson.
But so those guys getting to meet Caleb and actually know the person, because in my process evaluating Caleb, I think that's one of the things that it will be clear the more, if you guys haven't seen the Pivot interview, have you guys both seen it?
I have not yet.
Oh, wow. So he was on the Pivot last week. It was about an hour and 15 minute interview.
I didn't see the whole thing. I saw probably 15 minutes of it, pieces of it.
I want to say it was one of the most honest interviews I've ever seen. The level of maturity that Caleb showed in that. We had Justin Fields here for 3 years, and I feel like watching that one interview with Caleb, I got to know him better as a person than I did Justin Fields in 3 years. And that's not to take a knock at Justin Fields, because Fields was a guy who just, he wanted to work. He was a warrior, kind of like Derrick Rose back earlier in Chicago for the Bulls. He was a guy who just came in and went to work and didn't say much. He wasn't very outspoken. And that's kind of how Fields was. But Caleb answered every tough question that he could have. You could tell that beforehand, there was no, you can't ask this, you can't ask this. He was, ask me anything you want. I want all the tough questions, and I'm going to give you an honest response. And I recommend that every single Chicago Bears fan at some point, I know it's an hour-long show, and I'm not trying to hype up another YouTube channel that has nothing to do with us, but it was honestly one of the most well-done interviews I've ever watched. So as Bears fans, I think we should all watch that, and Caleb will definitely grow on you after that. Even if you're his biggest hater or you're his biggest fan, you're going to learn a lot from that.
Although I am going to switch over to my phone because I'm having a problem with my computer. Okay. So just give me 1 minute. You guys chat and I'll be back on in a second.
We will do so. So let me get rid of, there he is. All right. Swifty, so tell me, when, now that you have spent probably, what, the last 3-4 weeks or so digging into that Caleb Williams tape, what is it you like and what is it you're concerned about?
I'll get to the biggest concern first. I mean, the biggest concern for me is going to be the fumbles. And that's something that I think you can look at his tape, and no matter what you look at with the stats, the one thing that concerns me coming to the NFL, I'm not worried that he didn't operate under shotgun much. I'm not worried about his operating and timing of an NFL offense. I think he showcased that plenty in 2022, and 2023 was more of an outlier where he was trying to carry the team on his back. And that's where you see some people just watch the 2023 tape. They're going to be, oh, he plays too much hero ball, but he's already showcased that he can work within the timing and rhythm of an offense. So that's not a worry to me. It's the fumbles. He holds the ball loosely when he scrambles. He kind of holds it out away from his body, and 32 fumbles in 3 years. That's the one concern, but it's not a concern I'm going to overly critique, because that's something that can be coached out of him. And like I said, he played a ton of hero ball, but what I've seen is probably one of the best quarterbacks I've ever seen on tape. His time to release, which is a stat, I'm trying to find where I got the stat from, but 0.28 seconds to release the ball. The NFL average is somewhere around 0.4, 0.5 seconds. 0.28 is just insanely quick, and I can't even measure, but you see it on tape when he just the ball's out so quick and it catches defenders off guards. It allows him to not have the ball tipped. And even if there's a guy right here like this, he just contorts his arm and throws it around the other way. And his arm talent is special. And then one other thing, his ability to manipulate defenders in the pocket. Like he can slide, shuffle, reset his feet, even backpedal. Kind of makes him look like, in college at least, he was a man amongst boys, you could see. Because it almost looked like, you know, one of those big kids playing playground football. When he does the backpedaling and stuff, and that's one thing where scouts will see and be like, I don't know how that translates. But to me, it's just his football IQ. He knows what he can get away with, what he can't, and his ability to work within the pocket and his arm talent combined. He's just special, a special, special player. And I think all Bears fans are going to love him. Welcome back, Greg.
I'm here. No, that was a good comment. I have never had a problem with the talent of the Caleb. In fact, I wrote an article in Windy City, God, back in probably October, basically saying he was a generational player. He was the best since Mahomes. It was after that, talking to people around the league that made school calls and had some questions. And in fairness, Dan Pompey wrote an article last week, the end of last week in The Athletic, that brought up some of that stuff. I don't know if you saw it, about the intangibles and rated all the top quarterbacks, and the guy who was last was Caleb. And yep. Dan had talked to, I think, like seven different scouts and rating several different things. And that's what he came up with. And you know, in a way, it made me feel good. I'm not trying to trash Caleb. Just saying that everything I heard, that there was accuracy about it. There's people around the league that know it. It got to a point where the Bears are making the pick, and are they buying into him, the person that they think, you know, he can be the guy to lead this team to a championship, and that's all that matters. Doesn't matter what I think or what anybody else thinks, but, you know, the fact that Dan wrote that article, and did either of you guys see the article?
Yeah, I actually have it up right now. It was written on April 9th. By Dane Brugler, and
not the one about Brugler. This is by Pompey.
Dan Pompey
in the Athletic, and I think it was like Friday, maybe Dan might have wrote it.
Well, while you're looking for that, Swift, I'll ask both of you this question that James Hunter has put up. He says, "I thought he couldn't play in structure." Isn't that what Swifty said? That's one of the things that I'm a little concerned of with Caleb is playing in time, you know, getting the ball out. That's what coaches are looking for most. You know, the freelancing is fantastic. It's a way to get out of trouble when the blocking breaks down, blah, blah, blah. But playing in time is something that he has shown that he can do, but has he shown it consistently enough so that it's not a concern and we don't get back to the Justin Fields issues that we had? So Swift, you first.
This is something I've talked about extensively, and I did mention that in my initial scouting report of Caleb Williams 2 months ago, but I didn't say he could not operate within the structure of an offense. I said I didn't see it enough on tape, and I think anyone who's actually watched the tape, and I've watched Caleb's game at least 5-6 times of every single game. And it's not that he can't do it. It's that in 2023 specifically, he didn't do it enough. There were too many times when he passed up the easy reads to try to make it's play hero ball. That's the general term of it. But he tried to make bigger plays and not take what the defense gave him. But when you go back and look specifically at 2022, when he had Jordan Addison in that offense and he showed a unique ability to not only anticipate, but be on the exact same page as Jordan Addison, make those beautiful throws in rhythm, in timing with the offense, and anticipate exactly where Jordan Addison was going to be. And what happened was when we got to 2023, he lost that. Now, I like Brendan Rice. I like Taj Washington. I'm never a guy who was like he didn't have any weapons, but he didn't have that guy that he had next level chemistry with. And instead of trying to just take what the defense gave him, it was almost like USC wanted him to play hero ball because they knew that team wasn't good enough to win a championship unless Caleb put them on his back and became Superman and carried them to the next level. So if you just look, and that's what I did at first. I had watched all his tape, but when you're trying to scout, I watched the 2023 tape more. And when you focus just on the 2023 tape, you're going to come away with, why does he not take what the defense gives him? So you have to go back not only just to 2022, but then even look at him as a freshman at Oklahoma. And he showed the ability to work within the offense, work within the structure of the offense, and take what the defense gives him. So it's not that he can't do it. It's just everyone wondered, why did he not do it enough in 2023? And that leads some people to say, did he regress without Jordan Addison? But I don't believe that's the case. I believe he just tried to carry a team that wasn't good enough to compete for a championship, and he wanted him to compete for that.
CJ is letting us know that Pompey article is from April 17th. Go ahead, Greg.
Okay, and I agree with everything Swifty said. I'm going to take it a little bit further. USC had a terrible football team, especially on the defensive side of the ball. So it wasn't a case of the defense could hold and you had to score 28 points. Hell, you had to score 50 to win a game, 45 to 50 points to win a game. And you can see that with some of the scores they had. So it became, I think he took on upon himself to, I got to get the big play because we got to get points. I don't want a first down. I want a touchdown. Okay. Not always a good thing, but I understand where he was coming from. And I agree. If you go back and you look at the tape from 22, where he had a better offensive line, so he had better protection, but he also had better receivers. The defense was a little bit better, and he didn't have to play that we got to score every time we have the ball, otherwise we're not going to win the game. So I think it probably was a little frustrating for him this particular season, but you know, when you see that and you don't look at the year before, then you become concerned. I had a concern is that I saw, starting with the Notre Dame game, there was a drop off in his play. Now you could look at the numbers and you say, well, the numbers were fine. Yeah, but he wasn't making the plays that you want to see him make. And some of that has to do with when you start to learn more about what was going on at USC, then you start to figure it out. Now, let's be fair. Because if you're in a scouting room and you're having this conversation, there's going to be somebody, and it's going to be a coach, who's going to say, well, wait a minute, you're still supposed to play within the confines of the offense and be disciplined and everything else. So, and part of that is just to make sure that what you're seeing is the right thing, and the opinion you come up with, the final opinion you come up with, and the final grade you come up with is the right grade. You know, it's not about who's right, as I've said several times. It's not about who's right. It's about being right. And, you know, he's clearly the most talented quarterback in this class. Is he, you know, does he have all the intangibles about as some of the others? You know, I can't answer that. You'd have to sit down with each of the other quarterbacks to know that and do an in-depth study. But, you know, what it seems to be is that, you know, the draft's 3 days away and things that he has said publicly on these different shows is that he's already bought into, I know I'm going to be here. And now I want to be here 20 years and I want to break Tom Brady's records. So Tom Brady won 6 Super Bowls. I want to win 7. You know, yeah, they all say that he's got to do it, but it's still, he's putting pressure on himself to do it, which is a good thing.
Got some
has the mentality to do that. I think that's something that I picked up, especially from that interview, is he's a guy with supreme confidence that we're not going to need to motivate him. We're not going to need to push him. And that's one thing a lot of people worried about with how hard of a worker and good of a leader Justin Fields was, is that Caleb Williams might even be better. We're not going to take that leap yet, but this is a guy who shows every indication that he's going to be ready to handle what the NFL throws at him. And I love how he came to the Bears and said, do you want to win? Because this is a guy, they know they're getting a special talent here. So that puts pressure on Ryan Poles to make sure you keep putting the talent around this guy to keep him happy. And that's going to be key here. And I think he's going to be special.
Yeah, it's interesting that people in the chat really have, some people have some negative thoughts still about Caleb Williams. Here's an example. W.C. Brandt says, former cop here who understands forensic statement analysis, and I wholeheartedly disagree, Swifty. Caleb is very deceptive. His laugh when discussing JF must be Justin Fields, was Joker-like. What Greg knows is real. So we're going to be hearing this, I think, until the guy takes us to the Super Bowl, and hopefully he will.
Well, yeah, I mean, he's still got to prove it. He hasn't played a second in the National Football League. So, and I never doubted his talent. I doubted the intangibles. And that's still got to be proven. He's saying all the right things. He's doing all the right things right now. But he's still got to win over his new team completely. He's got to lead them. Now, I mean, here's the thing. The one thing that I'm concerned about is that, there's too many people who think he's going to lead the Bears to the playoffs next year. Well, that's happened twice since 2012. 2012, Andrew Luck did it with the Colts, and he was the first pick in the draft. Last year, Stroud was the second pick in the draft, did it with Houston. Hadn't been done any other time in between. And before that, it was years before that. It doesn't happen all the time. Part of it's luck. You got to have the key people stay healthy, because if you could keep people hurt, that screws up your season. So, if the season doesn't go exactly the way that people anticipate it going, you're going to hear this, you got to fire Flus and all this other bullshit. And I'm not buying into that. You just want to see the team grow. Because you are stepping back a little bit, having a rookie in there as the quarterback. Regardless of the talent, he's a rookie. He hasn't played in the league yet. And so we got to see how it's going to work. I just, I've said it a few times. I'm just anxious to see what the opening game is. I don't want to, we know it's not going to be Green Bay, because aren't they playing in Brazil or something?
Yeah.
Or Mexico?
They're playing the Eagles to start the season off. There's always the Thursday night game, and then they're playing on Friday, Packers and Eagles.
Right. Wow. So, it's that part is good, but, it could be opening up against Detroit. Give me the Little Sisters of the Poor in the opening week.
Give us the command.
just so you can build some confidence.
I do want to touch on one thing the chat said. I saw they're saying that we're crowning a quarterback again before he's even taken a snap. And I just want to make out the point. I don't think anybody here is crowning Caleb Williams, but I will say I'm more excited about him than any QB we've ever had in my lifetime. And I was more excited about Justin Fields than any QB in my lifetime before that. So the excitement is even more now than it was with Fields. But the Bears have never taken a quarterback this high in my lifetime. The highest we've ever drafted one was Mitch Trubisky at number 2. And I hated that pick. I threw my phone against the wall and broke it. I hated it. I would have rather taken Jamal Adams, a safety, at number 2. And I would never advocate for taking a safety that high. I'm just saying how much I dislike the Trubisky pick. But we never had a QB throw for 4,000 yards. We've never won a Super Bowl in my lifetime. I just missed 85. So this is something that we're excited, and this is a guy, the more you watch on Caleb Williams and the more you listen to him, the more excited I get. Now, of course, we still want him to prove it, but he's also put in a better position than any of those previous quarterbacks are. So when you add those things together, if you're not excited, what are you doing? Like, I don't understand how you could be a Bears fan and not be excited about the direction of this franchise. Ryan Poles is doing things the right way.
I agree wholeheartedly with you, Swift. We'll get one more comment regarding Caleb, and then we'll move on to some other topics. Ramsey says, can you guys critique Merrill Hodges' assessment? Merrill said that Caleb was inaccurate while on the run. Most of his stats are RPO. Arm strength isn't special. Can you guys comment on what former Chicago Bear, but primarily Pittsburgh Steeler, Merrill Hodge, said there?
It's his opinion. He can think what he wants to think.
But is he wrong?
No, well, I don't agree with everything he said there, you know, especially about arm strength, because the guy's got a cannon for an arm. And there's this, on the day of his pro day, they showed some clips of, you know, his big plays during the year. And one, he was rolling to his left and just threw a dart to the left side where he had to throw across his body. And neither foot was on the ground when he let go of the ball, and he still threw a dart. And DJ commented about the torque that he has in his upper body being able to do that. And DJ was 100% correct. So, that, you know, as far as what Merrill said about that, I don't agree with that. But, you know, hey, everybody has an opinion. They're entitled to it. If that's the opinion he wants to have, that's fine.
Absolutely. What's your opinion?
Can't throw on the run is just silly. That's crazy. Merrill, you need to not watch highlight tapes and actually put on the tape, because that's crazy. He had a 77%+ adjusted completion percentage. He had 47 balls dropped by his receivers over the years. His career yards per attempt was over 9%. His turnover-worthy throw percentage was 2.7%. And his deep ball passing grade, I'm not a big PFF guy at all, but 95.4 on the deep ball passing. And we've all seen him across his body throw the ball 60, 70 yards downfield without even having his feet set or putting it or being in a perfect platform to throw the ball. He can just contort his body, flick his wrist, throw it from any arm angle. He can throw from any platform. Like, this is a guy, his arm is special. Special arm talent. So I don't know what Merrill Hodge is talking about, but he's a guy who hasn't been relevant in a while and probably just wants some clicks. So that's all I'll say about that one.
You said it's an opinion. He's entitled to it.
Indeed.
But if he was with me, is that he comes in here. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, if he's sharing that opinion in the draft room, you're the director of scouting. And so what do you tell Merrill if he's one of your regional scouts and he shares that opinion?
You're going to have somebody come up with that, you know, has a separate opinion, or two or three others that have a separate opinion. You're going to discuss it. And then you can say, well, you know, five people saw him and four disagree with you. I think we're going with the four that disagree with you.
Very good.
That's basically how it's going to be done. When you're in meetings, you're going to have more than a half a dozen reports on a player. Mm-hmm. They aren't all going to be the same. So you've got to come up with some sort of collective opinion. And there's stuff you're going to throw out. And you know, your list, like my job was to listen to everybody. And then say, and you also know that you got to know the strengths and weaknesses of each individual scout. What positions does he scout well? What positions does he scout poorly? Because they're not good at every position. Some are special at some positions and average at others. And so, you know, you got to take that into consideration. And sometimes, you know, it takes a couple of years to figure that out, you know, when you're with a group, and then you try to line them up. Like we had our scouts, we did position cross checks, and that's how I tried to line it up. Like Ballard was a really good DB coach at one time, and he really understood DBs. I had Ballard cross check all the DBs. That's what he was strong at. Mark Shadowski was very, very good with defensive linemen, so I had him do the defensive linemen. Marty Barrett was a quarterback in college, understood receivers really well, so he did the receivers. And you know, it was just trying to put a strength on a strength to figure out and then go from there. And then you get, you know, you had a cross-check scout opinion, an area scout opinion, a GM opinion, a director's opinion. Then you got the position coach, the coordinator. You got several opinions, and you got to put them all together and say, okay, this is what he is. And then everybody's got to agree on it. And if everybody can't agree on it, or at least a high majority, then you can't take the guy.
Oh, I was going to ask that since you were on that. What happens if the room is split on a guy? But I'm glad you said that. And I just want to say one more thing about Caleb. I have three stats here. That first, he never threw an interception in the fourth quarter this season. No interceptions in the fourth all year. If you look at his last 2 years at USC, he didn't throw an interception on third or fourth down the entire 2 years at USC. And then his career in college, this is all 3 years, in the red zone, when it matters most, what they Eberflus calls the gold zone. 61 touchdowns, one interception. He takes his game to another level when it matters most. And that's my last point on Caleb. The dude is special. I just want to say, anyone out there who's still against the drafting of Caleb, yes, he has to prove it on the field. He hasn't done anything in the NFL. And Greg's seen it more than me. A lot of guys have been incredible in college and not translated to the NFL. But for me, everything I've seen, there's nothing that Caleb can't do that won't translate to the NFL. He just has to keep working like he's done so far and getting better. And we hope Poles continues to put him in a great position.
Great Which stuff. Brings us to the next point we want to get to. So given they're going with Caleb at number one, what do you think they will do at number nine versus what you want them to do?
I love that because you've made the point, and I think one of the things I've been a little bit high on is how talented this year's receiver class is. And I really want Ryan Poles to take advantage of that. And considering how talented it is, then that should also mean we don't have to take a receiver up at nine. But I tell you, if Romo Dunze was somehow on the board, that is the guy I want. When you ask what I want the Bears to do, if Romo Dunze is somehow there, I think he's special. He kind of glides when he runs. He can make every contested catch. Something special when you watched on his tape was Michael Penix Jr. would just kind of, when he was in trouble, he would just throw the ball to Romo Dunze. And he was so great at contorting his body in air. And even if the ball is thrown behind him, he's going to fight back for the ball. And even if he can't get it, he's going to draw a flag. And that helped Washington's offense a ton because he'll fight through a defensive back to get the ball. He'll use his body to box guys out. And he's just a guy I think is going to be special. But like I said, this receiver class is deep. So we could get a Brendan Rice or someone in the third round like a Tez Walker or Javon Baker. It's a crazy receiver class. So what I think they're going to do is address this defensive line. Whether that's at edge or defensive tackle, I think the two guys I think are most likely right now, I would say Jared Verse. I know you're not a big fan of Verse. I don't see as much stiffness as you do. I see a guy who's really powerful that Flus will like because I think he's going to hold up setting the edge. And he's very athletic, very powerful, and he's a guy that never quits on tape. And then I think Poles will love his game. I think Flus will too. And the other guy is Byron Murphy. He's a little shorter. He doesn't have as long of arms, but I think his disruption on the defensive line. And the biggest thing I saw on tape, when you watch Byron Murphy in that Texas defense, and you see Tavondre Sweat there, big, one of the biggest humans I've ever seen. And you're like, why is Byron Murphy playing the nose when you got Tavondre Sweat there? And it's because that guy, even at 6 foot tall, 297, was better versus the run than Tavondre Sweat does. And I think NFL scouts are going to love Byron Murphy. He's going to go higher than most people project him. And then the third guy is going to be Dallas Turner. He's somehow on the board. I think Poles and the Flus are going to take him.
Well, no, I don't disagree. Before you came on, we had a discussion about this a little bit. And you know, when I look at this and figure out, okay, what are they going to do? Trying to get into the heads of the people who make the decisions is watch. Number one, what have they done before? Number two, where did they come from? And what did those teams do? So Paul's only experience is Kansas. His whole career has been in Kansas City. And all the success of it has been with Kansas City under Andy Reid. Andy Reid did not believe in taking a first-round receiver. Okay, the last one he took was in Philadelphia. He took two in Philadelphia. with Macklin being the last one, and that was a long time ago. But he never took it to Kansas City, took it in the second round, but none in the first. And the first round with Andy is your meat and potato guys. And he's a former offensive lineman and a former offensive line coach. But, and then as we talked about before you came on, you look at just this past season, they basically stripped their wide receiver core and still won a Super Bowl, brought in new guys. And so is it the receiver or is it the guy throwing? It's a combination of the two. But had Poles not gone out and traded for Keenan Allen, I would say it's a lock that he's going receiver at 9. But now he's got two very good receivers. Granted, the depth isn't that good. But as far as the pass rush, he's got one pass rusher on the whole team. And it's a defense that's predicated on putting pressure on the passer. And they, when you got one, it doesn't work. And they've stated three different times that I can count that it's imperative they get another pass rusher. So now they didn't do anything in free agency as far as bringing in a free agent edge guy, pass rusher. They could have. The money was big, and you know that's going to happen. What's the one position he hasn't drafted with a premium pick so far? An edge. And it's a premium position to take, not only, you know, with a premium pick. And you want to have that because if you look at the money these guys got in free agency, then you want that just like you want a rookie contract with a quarterback, you want a rookie contract with a good edge. So I can see them taking an edge. You know, a lot of people think that Dallas Turner is going to go to Atlanta. Let's assume Atlanta has that pick. What I've been hearing is it's Murphy to Atlanta. But, you know, you hear a lot of BS right now. Who the hell, you know, we're going to find out Thursday night. You know, about an hour and a half in, we're going to find out who the hell Atlanta's taken. But I think if Turner is there, they might pull the trigger. Otherwise, they want to trade. Because the word around the league, people in the league are saying the Bears are letting it be known they want out of the pick. They want to get some more picks. And you can trade down a little bit. You trade down 4 slots, 5 slots, you're going to pick up a third round pick. Okay, now you're getting into a danger zone if you trade down far enough to get a second. Because now you're getting to, supposedly the Colts want to move up. If that's the case, the Colts are at 17. Well, are you below the line at 17 from getting one of the quality players that you want? It really depends on how your board's set up. And then you got to get lucky. You know, somebody takes somebody that's not in that, you know, that is below that group as you have your. I can't see him going back that far. Could it happen? Yeah. But I think if you trade back, you get a 3, you're still going to get a hell of a player. And you pick with what you pick up in the 3, you got a little more ammo that if you want to get into the second and you want to give up a pick for next year, you got the ammo to do it. Doesn't mean you're going to do it, but you have the ammo to do it. And it really gets down to you've got to have a love affair with a player. You know, you got to get to the point, okay, it's going to cost me X amount to get to this point, and there's a guy that I really want, so I'm going to pull the trigger.
So my question would be,
we're not going to find that out until Friday sometime.
How do you feel about Liatu Latu? Because, I mean, when you're looking at the three edges, the three top edges to me, it's Dallas Turner, it's Liatu Latu, and it's Jared Verse. And I think Latu, even though I believe he's the best pass rusher, and I really love his game, I think he's the least fit for the Bears. He has the shorter arms. He's the worst out of the three when it comes to holding up against the run. Not saying he's bad, but then there's also the medical concern, which I don't like to get into, but those three things probably makes him third on the list to me.
Okay. As far as I know, the medical's good. Now, I haven't talked to anybody from the Bears, but I've talked to two other teams, and they all said he's good. He's fine. And
that's great to hear.
What a lot of doctors do or medical staffs do is they look at, okay, what's he done lately? He's played 2 years without a problem. And that surgery was 3.5 years ago. He had a fusion in his neck. there's guys playing in the league with discs in their necks used. So it's the important thing is you do an MRI. Was it a good surgery? Is there any arthritis in the joint? That type of thing. But, you know, what's his flexibility as far as being able to turn? So if those are all good, then he should be good to go. And like I say, I don't know what the Bears grade is. I know what a couple other clubs are. And they said, as far as they were concerned, he was fine. I agree with you. He is the most ready to play and get production as a pass rusher. But part of it is upside. And I think when you look at the, he doesn't have the upside because he's not the athlete that Turner is, that Chop Robinson is. And I'm a Chop Robinson fan. Chop Robinson is raw, but he's just 21 years old. And he plays with a viciousness. He just, whether it was, you know, when he missed some games because of an injury this year, whether if it was coaching at Penn State, that part I don't know. But when you look at the traits that he has and his get off and the intensity that he plays with, I think his upside's way up here. It's where do you take him? But in at first, you know, I think Verse all-around game is the best because he plays the run really well. And I think he's going to be a really good player in the league. I just think he has a limitation as a pass rusher, that his ceiling as a pass rusher is 8-9 sacks a year. I don't ever see him being a double-digit sack guy, where I think the other guys can all be double-digit sack guys.
See, I think sacks are it's, a lot of times it's a product, though, of luck. I mean, pressures are a more consistent one, but I think he's a guy who, like you said, he could be an 8-sack-a-year guy, but when you're playing across from Montez Sweat, and if Jervon Dexter develops and the secondary plays as well as it could, he could luck into 10 sacks easy just from being across from Montez Sweat and the havoc that Jervon Dexter and Montez Sweat could wreck. He could be the guy who reaps the benefit of that. We saw that last year with the production went up on everyone else on the line when we got Montez Sweat.
Right.
So I think to me, it's kind of arbitrary whether it's 8 or 10 sacks. But if he's a guy who can get pressures and hold up against the run, I think Alex Brown was like that. He was a guy, I compare him a little bit to Alex Brown. He's a guy who most people would probably say he wasn't going to be a 10 sack guy, but I think Alex, he got close a couple times. I don't know if he ever got it. He might have, but he was always there. He was always getting the pressures, and he always held up well against the run. And I love players like that.
Yeah, but don't forget, we got Alex in the fourth round.
Yeah, true. Gator, though.
But he and he hated that. Just to tell you a story, because I've told before. I'm going to say once a month, during my whole time there, Alex would walk up into my office during the season. Will you tell me why I went in the fourth round again? You know, it just pissed him off. And that was probably one of the reasons that he played as well as he did. And my answer was always, don't blame me. We're the guys that took you. Be pissed off at the other 31 teams.
Yeah, don't be pissed off at us for taking you, man. That's great. I love Alex Brown, though. He's always been a favorite.
Really, really good guy. And he got into the process. I mean, you know, later in his career, I mean, he wanted to study tape and you know, get an opinion on a player and ask how you watch certain players, whatever. He really got into the evaluation process. I'm really like, good guy.
So I think the next
thing I wanted to bring up one thing, get back to
go ahead.
To Byron Murphy. And
that's where I was going, actually. So.
So I hear some people say, well, it could be another Aaron Donald. Well, he's not Aaron Donald. There's only one of those guys. But look at the numbers. Aaron Donald went 13th in the draft. Okay, and the Bears are drafting ninth. Aaron Donald was 6006, 285. Byron Murphy is 6004, 297. Aaron Donald had 32 5/8-inch arms. Byron Murphy has 32 3/8-inch arms. So there's a quarter-inch difference in their arms. There is a quarter-inch difference in their height. In the 40, Aaron Donald was 4.68, and Byron Murphy was 4.87. So there's 0.2 of a second difference in their 40-yard dash. One of the surprising things is vertical jump, Byron Murphy, 33 inches to Aaron Donald's 32. The long jump, 9.3 for Murphy, 9.8 to Aaron Donald. Murphy did 28 reps of 225. Aaron Donald at 35, which is really, really impressive. And then the three cone, I don't care about the 20 shuttle, but the three cone, is because there's so many change of directions. Aaron Donald tore up for a big guy, 7.11. And Murphy had a good time, 7.5. That's a hell of a time for a big guy. But you look at the numbers across the board, Aaron Donald was a better athlete all across the board. I think it's unfair to even try to compare him. I like Murphy. I think he's going to be a good player in the, but you took two guys last year in the second and third round that are three techs, and Pickens is a three tech. They might have played him as the one last year, but he's a three. Mm-hmm. And they really liked the way Dexter played. And in fact, I saw a quote by Sweat recently where they were asking him about it, and he said he's going to be a monster. And so if you believe that about him, why are you bringing in another guy to play that same position and use a first-round pick? To me, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
I think it's and I had been with that similar philosophy all offseason, and I recently made a video talking about Byron Murphy and Jerzon Newton, Johnny Newton, because I believe I had overlooked it a little bit. And when I heard Eberflus's comments recently, I believe it was, I don't remember exactly when it was, a few weeks back, but he made the comments that he was looking for a 1-2 punch on the defensive line, and he went out of his way to bring up defensive tackles both times. He was like, it could come from inside or outside. We just want a 1-2 punch. And the more he kept saying that, the more I thought, okay, I know they got Dexter and Pickens, and all along I've expected those guys. I think Dexter's easily our biggest breakout candidate heading into this season. So I'm huge on Jervon Dexter, but maybe he wants more in that interior of the line. And when I went back and looked at Dexter's tape last year, they also had Dexter come in at edge a lot more than I thought, probably 10 to 15% of his snaps. But that's a big guy he has the length to go out there on edge on third downs. So if they do want an interior guy, do you think you're not high on either Murphy or Newton? Because I was kind of feeling the same way. I thought if we're going to go interior, it would be a guy in the second or third round when you can get a guy. There's guys out there in the second and third round that we can get, like Brandon Dorlus is one I'm a huge fan of. But there's more depth when I look at the interior of the defensive line than there is edge. So that leads me back towards one of those top three guys, Jared Verse, Dallas Turner, or Liatu Latu.
And I put Chop.
Yeah, I love Chop. Yeah. I'm a big fan. I'm both of the Robinsons, Chop and Darius. I really like both of those guys.
AK, if you're looking at, I'm big on packages. So, you know, what are you getting in the first or the second or the third type of thing to make your team better? Okay, so like you said, and everybody knows, the wide receiver class is really good. So let's assume they don't get a second anywhere, and they have, and they do trade down a little bit, and they have 2/3. In the third round, you're going to get a hell of a receiver. I just wrote down some names. Some of these guys may end up going in the second, but this year I'm expecting 10 to 12 receivers to go in the first two rounds. That's only happened twice in the last 10 years. Usually it's 8 or 9 go in the first two rounds. But even assuming 10 to 12 go, these are names that could be, and if they're not, there's names that I didn't have on there that I figured would go in the second would fall back. But Polk from Washington, McMillan from Washington. I think McMillan is one of the most underrated players in this draft because he was hurt and missed part. He's playing hurt all year. But you go back and you look at his tape from a year ago, and he was outstanding. Luke McCaffrey from Rice. Burton from Alabama. Malik Washington, who is a pure slot receiver from Virginia, Walker from North Carolina, and Rice from USC. Every one of those guys is better than what they got.
I love Malik Washington. He's a guy who's not talked about enough.
Yeah. Hell of a football player. He's like a running back when he's got the ball in his hands. And he touches everything. He's like the guy from Boston College last year that the Ravens took and ended up catching like 75 passes as a rookie. Not as good.
Flowers, yep.
But, yeah, he's that kind of player, and they're similar size. Washington's a little bulkier, and Flowers is a tad faster, but it's not like a huge amount faster. They're both really quick. But you're just what you're saying, if you take a guy like that, he's strictly a slot. He can't play outside. But what he can do is return kicks. And with the kickoff change rules, you're going to need a really dynamic kickoff return. So, but anyway, now when you go to the edge rushers that might slip down into the third round, I don't think any of these guys are as good as the receivers. They're good and don't know if they're going to be how good they're going to be when they're pros. They're all, they've got question marks. Adisa Isaac from Penn State, Braylon Trice from Washington, Brennan Jackson of the scoop, I probably like the best, Washington State. Mo Kamara, I like Mo Kamara a lot, but Mo Kamara is 6'1 and a half. He's got longer arms for a short guy, but he runs really well and he's very productive. Jonah Ellis, an undersized guy from Utah. And then a guy that never gets talked about, but I think he's like a year away because he should have stayed in school, is Austin Booker from Kansas. Oh,
I love Austin Booker. Yeah, he's not talked about enough. He's my sleeper.
Yeah, but no one probably, and you know, I watched Kansas a lot because Ballard's son was the backup quarterback, started two games as a true freshman. So I ended up, and the head coach is a friend of mine. So I watched them quite a bit. I probably saw 8 games. And Booker always jumped out. And then finally, you know, he never played at Minnesota. He was a backup. He was at Minnesota for a couple of years. They were, I'm going to say, in December, right after the season ended, they were positive he was coming back. And all of a sudden, I don't know what happened, that changed his mind, but he decided to enter the draft when we got into January. He may not be ready. He's got a real thin lower body. He's got to get bigger. He's got to get stronger. But he's just got some – the way he uses his hands, the way he attacks, the way he competes, the upside is real high with that player.
Yeah, he's one of the guys –
but you might not see him as a rookie.
I've come around on Austin Booker a lot recently, but it's still what I think your point there was dead on, was when I look at wide receivers in the top 100, there's a ton. When I look at tackles in the top 100, there's quite a few. Defensive end, it's start after you get those top three, and then both of the Robinsons, Chop and Darius, which you can have Darius at defensive tackle or defensive end. I think he's
a three technique myself.
Yep. And then after that, it drops off. You listed the guys. It's Isaac, Nealon, Broswell, Trice, Ellis, Booker, and that's about it for me. And then edge is just gone. Whereas when you're looking in that same range at wide receiver, there's a chance a guy like Xavier Leggett or Malachi Corley or Jalen Polk or Javon Baker, Tez Walker, Brendan Rice, Malik Washington, Jalen McMillan. It's stacked. So many receivers there. We can get one in round 3. That makes it okay if we pass on one in round 1. But even looking at defensive tackle, have you studied any of the guys? There's a couple here I'll name. Braden Fisk, I like. Ruka Ro-Ro-Ro-Ro. Ruka Ro-Ro-Ro, hard to say his name. Brandon Dorless, and then Mike Hall Jr. from Ohio State. And then I love Gabe Hall, too, the guy from Baylor. But I think there's
– yeah, Gabe Hall's a good player.
Spot. Go ahead.
The Ohio State kid is really good.
Hmm. Yeah, I love him. I think he could be there in round 3, and that's where it's like, oh, man. So,
yeah,
my only thought about this,
look at his tape. He's really, really good. He was a 5-star.
So this is the only reason I'll say maybe we skip an edge this year, because when I look at the talent on this board, I see wide receivers stacked, tackles stacked, And there's depth to both of those positions. And then I see similar on the interior of the defensive tackle and at center. And why not wait till next year to get that edge rusher? Maybe we sign Unique Ngakoue for another year after the draft.
That's really your only option. Mm-hmm. Is you got and he's going to cost money. He's not going to come cheap. You might get him cheaper than last year, but and you'll probably what you probably have to do is, I mean, production wise, last year was his worst year in the NFL. LeGrandy, he was hurt and he missed some games, but you know you might have to give him less base salary. You put some incentives in there so he can earn as much. If he produces, to me, that's fair. Well, it's not up to me. It's up to him and up to his agent. And, you know, he's a guy that's not going to get signed, excuse me, until after the draft by whoever takes him. I mean, he wasn't signed until August last year.
Whoever doesn't get an edge or someone gets hurt,
Right, but he's the last guy standing. There's nobody else out there. I don't know if next year's class is going to be that much better. Like, you know, people keep bringing up the Ohio State guys. I think both of those guys are average. Ooh. Neither one of them, you know, I was sort of glad they stayed in school. But, yeah, I can't disagree with you on the tackle thing. But if you – to me, it's like – put it this way. If you don't take one in the first year and get one, because you might be reaching later on. We'll find out. I mean, but like I said, I'll go back to my original. But the word around the league right now is they're trying to get out of nine.
I like that. I think we need, even if we only move down a couple picks, if you go to somewhere between 12 and 15,
you're going to get a third.
There, get a third rounder. And then if you want to turn one of those third rounders into a second by using the pick from next year by trading up, that's always an option. Right. So having two thirds. And a fourth, that'll make this draft. We can attack those other positions on day two.
Yeah.
But what do you think is more likely then? Because I know Flus has said it. They love the pressure from the interior of the D-line. So do you think there's a chance at all we go D-tackle early in the first round?
I mean, it gets down to who's there. It's who versus who. And how their board is set up. That one thing we're never going to know is how their board is set.
I know. That's the one thing. Hey, I wish we'd be on Hard Knocks just so we could see that after one time. Just,
you know, that draft board. And everybody's board is different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you could get a screenshot of, say, 15 different boards, what their first round looked like, not one of them is going to be similar to another. They're all going to be different. Some of them have to do with.
They've predicted the draft really well these last 2 years. So if he can do that again this year with how the board falls, we should be able to fall back a few picks and still land either an edge or a defensive tackle or maybe even offensive tackle.
Well, you know, some of those edges I mentioned, they got a chance to be pretty decent players. The guy, I like the Jackson kid from Washington State because he's got a great motor, but he's a little stiff too. But I think he's going to make up with it because you can compare him to Verse and decide that he's got some stiffness in his hips, but the motor is outstanding. And he had, I think, 8 or 9 sacks at Washington State this year. But he's never going to be a double-digit sack guy in the league. If it's going to be a double-digit sack guy in this thing, you know, the guys who might have the best chance are Kamara, Ellis, or Isaac, because they're quicker, they're faster. The Ellis from Utah had 12 sacks in the Pac-10, and he missed the last two games.
Mm-hmm. I like so, his spin move is lethal. That's one thing.
Yeah,
it's like whew,
okay. He's the same size as Ngakoue coming out.
Okay.
Hey guys, almost I got a question for numbers. Both of you.
Okay.
You know, talking about the defensive tackle position, out of the names that Swift mentioned, which one, if any, can has the versatility to also move outside on certain packages. Like, for instance, I look at Brandon Dorlus, and I really like his length and size and quickness. And I think he can play the defensive tackle role, but on certain packages, I would love to see him as an edge rusher. Do you agree with that? And if not, are there any defensive tackles you think have that versatility?
I'll go first if you want. It's him. Yeah, you mentioned him. Dorlus is the guy. And then the other one was Darius Robinson. They both showcased it at the Senior Bowl. They came in as defensive tackles, but they also took reps at edge and would win against some of these really good offensive tackles. And I actually asked them both down at the Senior Bowl, where do you see yourself playing on the line? And both of them said we could play anywhere on the line. And I kind of agreed with it. So those are the two guys where I think they're, like Greg said, probably perfect three techs in this defense, but it wouldn't be bad to see him. They did it last year with Jervon Dexter, which is something I didn't expect, but I didn't catch it as much live during the games. But when I went back and watched the tape, I kept going, oh, there's Dexter on the edge again. Cause he'd look, it almost looked like DeMarcus Walker. And I'd be like, wait, no, oh, that's Jervon Dexter. So they do stuff like that and they move guys around. So, I mean, I can't rule that out, but I just know we have a lot of options to make this team a lot better. What do you think, Greg?
I can't hear Swifty. He's breaking up.
Oh.
Can you hear me, Greg? You hear me okay? I think you're just having general Wi-Fi issues this morning. Who's a defensive tackle you think has that versatility, Greg, to potentially play in the middle of the line and go outside?
I don't know Dorlus enough to say yay or nay, so it would be Robinson. But Robinson, you know, knowing what they want at edge, you know, he ran a 4.9 and change. You know, to me, can he do it and get away with it for a few plays? Yeah, but it's not what you want. In this scheme, and it's the same scheme we ran with Lovie, and, you know, so you're looking for the same type of people, is those defensive ends, size doesn't matter as much. It's being able to get upfield, bend, and get inside to pressure the quarterback. And so when you got a 290-pound guy like Robinson, is he going to be able to do it? Yeah, can you get away with it for some downs and more on base downs than actual pass downs? But they got that in Walker already too, because, even though Walker can play outside, I think he's better – moving inside as an interior pass rusher when you get into passing down situations. So, and that's just, you know, I'm saying that based on my understanding of the scheme, you know, so I know what they'd rather have based on that. And right, like I say, I keep going back to the same thing. Right now there's one. There's Montez Sweat, and there's nobody else because, you know, they drafted the Miami of Ohio a couple of years ago, and he hadn't done anything. I mean, no, he jumped out of the gate real quick as a rookie. And then, you know, last year you were expecting him to make a jump. He didn't do anything. I'm not going to say he regressed, but he didn't take a jump either. So has he hit the wall? Is that as good as he's going to be? And you got to have somebody who can play that position. Yeah. Can you wait another year? Maybe. But then you're banking on the fact that you got to sign Ngakoue. And then Ngakoue might have you by the nuts that way because he knows. So you want me, you got to pay me.
So, Mike, I think what are your thoughts on offensive tackle then? I think that's the one we haven't touched. I'm a pretty big fan of Braxton Jones. I think he's good enough to be the starting left tackle. But I'm not against upgrading. I really like Troy Fatanu from Washington, and then I like Tali Fuaga from Oregon State, Olu Fushanu. There's just a lot of guys there that if Poles really thinks, hey, we can get our left tackle of the future here too, do you think that's on the table right now, or do you think they've kind of ruled that out?
I mean, I don't know if they rule it out. One thought I have, let's say Alt, for some reason, is there, and he's the highest guy on their board. So what do you do with Braxton Jones? I talked about this last week. You move him inside. Put him at guard then and put Alt at left tackle. So, okay, what happens to either Tevin or what's the other guy's name?
Nate Davis.
Gone brain dead with the other guard's name, the guy they signed last year.
Nate Davis.
Yeah.
Yeah, Nate Davis. If you look at how Nate Davis, they gave some money to last year. You look at the games he didn't play up to expectations. His mom also died. There's a reason behind it, and I think, you know, that affected his play. Tevin, on the other hand, as good as he is, because when he's playing, he's one of the better guards in the league, at least as a run blocker. He still needs work on his pass protection, but he's in the last year of his contract. He hasn't been durable, and there seems to be some disconnect between him and the staff. Now,
wait, Nate,
we don't know that for sure, but it's been reported as such.
Yeah. We're talking about Nate Davis or Tevin Jenkins?
This is his fourth. No, Tevin Jenkins is going into his fourth year.
Oh, Tevin. Okay. So I thought you were talking about Nate.
Yeah. No, Nate's got 2 years left. Yeah. And Tevin, this is Tevin's last year. And if you look at how Poles has handled previous regimes players, and Justin Fields is a prime example, it's like, who's the guy who's going? If you draft a tackle and you're moving Braxton Jones inside, who can be traded and get value, get some sort of value? It's Tevin.
I don't want to move on from Tevin.
I'm not saying I agree with it or disagree with it, just that it's logical.
I'm worried about Tevin because he's one of my favorite players on the roster. And after, I think one of my biggest worries from this offseason is how much those free agent guards got paid. And with Tevin not being able to prove he can stay healthy so far, I felt like there's pretty much two scenarios here. Either he's going to end up being let go because he stays healthy and wants too much money, or he's going to battle with injuries again and we're just going to let him walk. It's hard for me to envision them re-signing Tevin Jenkins to a long-term deal here, because even if he stays healthy all year, they're going to be like, well, we're not giving you $100 million. Good luck. Have fun in free agency. What do you feel about that? Because I think he's our best offensive lineman. I think Darnell Wright can take that over soon. But as far as on tape last year, Tevin was our best.
He's the best run blocker. There's no question he's the best run. He's a dominant run blocker. He has his moment. I mean, most of the time he's pretty good in pass pro, but there's other times it's like, whoa. He's just not consistent. And I thought he'd be better moving inside because he did have some problems with wide speed when he was playing tackle as a rookie. But, you know, again, just looking at what do you do when you want your best five and who has value around the league. Tevin's tape is good enough that he'd have some value. How much value? You know, I can't answer that. But if you draft an alt, if you put it this way, if you draft an alt at 9, if he falls, I don't think he will. I think he's going to San Diego. And if he doesn't go to San Diego, not San Diego, the Chargers. Yep. Yeah, the Titans will take him. So he's not getting past 7. But if for some reason he did, okay, then the next guy's the kid from Washington.
That's who I like, yeah.
I think he can play. Yeah, I mean, he can play left tackle. He doesn't have the height that you want, but he's got the length, and he's got great athleticism. He's a fit for this scheme because he can get out in space.
Yep, and he's a guy who he finishes blocks like crazily. Like, he's super explosive. I love his tape.
I'd rather have Braxton Jones than the Penn State guy than Fashanu. And I like Fashanu, but Fashanu's not anywhere as good an athlete as Braxton Jones is.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, and I agree with Chad's comment here that Faletano's size and versatility, he's the best fit for the Bears' current offensive line situation. He's because of that versatility, and you've got all these question marks with injuries with the two guards. You aren't 100% certain about the left tackle Braxton Jones. So Faletano could come in and play any one of those positions at a moment's notice. I like that.
I probably wouldn't want him. I agree with that.
I can't disagree with you on that.
because I think you could bring him in. What I would do is if I drafted Fatanu, you leave him on the left side because he's a guy who could play anywhere. I'd put him at left guard, move Tevin back to right guard, have Tevin and Darnell Wright right next to each other, and then you have Nate Davis battle him. You have Nate Davis battle with him or the left guard, and then you have competition at center between Coleman Shelton and Ryan Bates. But you keep Braxton there at left tackle, and if something happens with Braxton, either he takes a step back or he gets hurt, Fatanu could then just slide over one spot from left guard to left tackle. And it's something I hadn't seen done a lot in the NFL, but the Cowboys have been doing it with Tyler Smith. They drafted him, put him they want him to be their left tackle of the future. So, but a lot of teams used to be like, oh, well, let's move him over to right tackle, have him start over there, and then move him back. I actually like starting him at left guard so then he can just – because you're staying on the same side. It's a completely different stance when you're going from left tackle to right tackle. When you're left tackle to left guard, you're just taking a step over. And I think it would be an easier transition for a guy who can play anywhere on the line.
Good thought. But
I love his game.
We used to do that in New York with guys. We took Luke, I think it was in maybe 99, maybe 2000. We took Luke Pettigrew from Notre Dame late in the first, played him at left guard as a rookie, and then moved him out. He was a tackle at Notre Dame, then moved him out to tackle in the second year. And he was a, you know, he's a pretty good player. He wasn't a Pro Bowl type player, but a pretty good player. I'm big, you know, on Braxton. I'm a big Braxton Jones fan, and mainly, and I've said it, I don't know if you've heard it, Swifty, but I've said it to Aldo a million times. When you look at his background, where he came from, he came from like the worst FCS program in the country. He didn't come, you know, have the background of learning how to play at a Notre Dame or Ohio State like some of these other guys. So he had to do it up here. So, he, you know, he came into the league behind. It showed because he didn't have the lower body. His upper body strength is fine. His lower body power wasn't there. And a lot of that had to do with the program he came from, not that he couldn't do it. But he showed drastic improvement from year one to year two, and he'll show even more improvement from year two to year three. Will he ever be a Pro Bowler? No. But he's going to be, at his worst, he's going to be better than Leno, and Leno was pretty damn good. You know, so it's to me, you don't, I mean, here's the problem is I'm kind of going all over the place. They don't have a backup left tackle as it sits right now. You can get away with Borum. I don't know if Borum's going to be here unless he takes a haircut financially because he got one of those incentive raises bonuses, because of the play time his first 2 years. Yeah, he's making like $3.2 million. At $3.2 million, he ain't going to be here. Granted, he earned it because he played a lot his first 2 years. But, you know, right now they got to find somebody to be that backup tackle. And I don't know if he's on – you know, they signed a couple guys in free agency – that you can get by with, but I don't know if they got a guy who can play the left side if Braxton Jones goes down.
Yeah, true. And that's, I think that's one of our biggest needs heading into the draft. The guy I think would be a no brainer if he falls would be a pick 75, that tackle out of Yale. They really liked him, brought him in for a top 30 visit. I think his name's like Kieran Omega DG or something, but he's a guy, he has
the kid from Yale.
Yeah, he looks like Braxton. He's got the long arms, the big hands. He's athletic. I think he's a guy who could develop into a starting left tackle, and he'd be good to come in and learn behind Braxton and potentially to even take his job someday. Have you studied his tape at all?
He's a local kid. Yep. Yeah, I did him. Actually, I did him during the year for one of the agents I worked for, and I gave him a third-round grade. And the guys like DJ – Kuiper, they all got him going in the third. It might be a little too soon, having played at Yale, but he's got length. He can do it. If you put it this way, excuse me, you get two thirds, you can get him and a receiver. in the third round.
That's unless great. Somebody him and Brendan him. Rice. Ooh. Add Brendan Rice and Karen and Megan.
Whoever the receivers. Like I said, I named like six, and all six are better than the backups they got behind Allen and DJ right now.
I think we could even get a wide receiver three in round four. So that's another thing I've mentioned as well. We can even wait till round four and probably still get a pretty darn good wide receiver. We definitely can't do that at edge. So that's the biggest conundrum for me right now. I love the wide receivers, but we can wait.
Now we all have to accept the fact that all of the holes on this team are not going to be filled with this draft, but we can take a giant step forward in adding two blue chip players in the first round and adding some players who could be starters in a year or two if we stay with those four picks. This is a great situation for Ryan Poles. He just has to hit on these picks, whether it's four of them, five of them, or six of them. So it's going to be really cool. Swift, what do you got going on at the Swift Sports Network this week with your draft coverage?
I have a big Caleb Williams video I've been working on for over a month now, breaking down pretty much everything on him. I'll have that out probably Wednesday, if not Thursday morning before the draft. So then that way afterwards, we already know we're taking number one. So I've already done all my research. Once we traded Justin Fields, it was clear as day that Caleb Williams is the pick. And so I've done as much research, probably way too much, but I got a giant video on that dropping Wednesday. And then Thursday this week for the draft, we'll be doing some fun stuff. I'll probably be joining Adam Mason, maybe a couple other shows. We'll be doing a couple shows with Samo and Will Wright over on the MODG squad over there. And then hopefully I think I'm going to try to have Greg join me sometime next week so we can talk about who the Bears actually picked. But right. A lot of stuff coming, man. It's draft time. The favorite time of the year, I know.
Yeah, it's a great time, no doubt. Guys, any other things that you want to talk about before we pull the plug on this episode?
No, I think we got unless there's some more questions in there that people want answered.
Yeah, let's see. I saved a few thoughts here. there's a couple here that are funny. Okay, let's Free Palestine says, Greg, thoughts on Turner playing under Flus if drafted. What do you think about Dallas Turner being at that edge position, guys, if he is the draft pick?
I mean, he's a perfect fit for what they want. He's got length, he's got speed, he's got upfield ability, he's got pass rush ability. He can play the run. He doesn't play the run as good as first plays the run, but I think he'll immediately be a better pass rusher because of his speed and his flexibility. He's perfect. Like I said, a lot of people got Atlanta taking him in eight, but just in the last 3-4 days, I've been hearing Murphy a lot to Atlanta.
So I got something that rolls off of that because this was the news this morning. Greg, do you think there's any chance the Falcons lose pick number eight? There's multiple reports out there that tampering. The NFL, I don't think there's – I think it's kind of unlikely that the NFL just throws a wrench into the top 10 picks just a couple days before the draft. But – they've shown they're serious when it comes to this tampering stuff, and they've taken a first-round pick from the Dolphins. Do you think there's any chance they actually take that pick number eight away from them?
Well, number one, I know the agent involved.
Mm-hmm.
The agent said there was no tampering, at least on his part.
Well, see, okay. Kirk Cousins said in the interview,
I get it.
He talked to Ryan Pace beforehand. Maybe not the agent, but he talked to Ryan Pace.
Well, I can talk to you beforehand, too, and it's not tampering unless you say specific things. There's no law against people. It's what's said. True. And that's the big thing. But here's the thing. With Miami, it was the owner involved, and it was a whole year before.
Mm-hmm.
So it was an entirely different scenario. They can't when they penalized some teams last year, they did it like the day of the draft or the day before the draft. So that's why the media is working on that it could come down Wednesday or Thursday morning. But I would think, you know, Atlanta would want to know, like, now.
Exactly.
You know, because like... you do all that work. And it could be they don't have enough information yet. Yeah. You know, if they don't, just because the media
the report this morning was that they're going to come to a decision on it this week. So that made me think.
Well, I know that's what Schefter anticipated, but, you know, he hadn't been right 100% of the time.
Yeah, exactly.
If you're going to knock a team a first round pick, then you better be damn sure you're right on it. And if they aren't, then, you know, you gotta either wait till next year or do something less. Now, because the player talking to the team versus the agent talking money, you know, that's two different things too. I mean, I don't know. I mean, clearly, I know the agent said nothing happened, at least from his part. I don't know exactly what happened. I know it's been reported, but exactly what happened and how bad that is in the league's eyes, because let's be honest, everybody does it. It's don't get caught and don't be blatant. You know, and was this blatant?
We will find out. And the penalty.
I mean, put it this way: the Bears had the run had your namesake signed what 15 minutes into free agency. You're going to tell me that deal wasn't talked about for days?
DeAndre.
I mean, 15 minutes into the negotiation period, not even the opening of free agent period.
See, so they did it different. They hammered that out. 15.
Did they? And you did the deal?
Yeah, I relayed it. To DeAndre Swift.
You know,
so it wasn't tampering. They posed just talked to me. It was good.
Go ahead.
Go ahead, guys. I got one more question here. Did you guys address Adisa Isaac? I know, Greg, you and I talked about him last week. There was a great article by Dan Pompey about Isaac growing up with he's got some siblings that were, brothers and sisters who have some special needs, and he's been just great at helping them. But he's also a fine football player. What do you guys think about Isaac, and potentially if, you know, the Bears get a second-round draft pick, maybe drafting Adisa Isaac?
I think two is a little rich. Wouldn't shock me because of this class at that position, but I think he's really a three. In fact, it wouldn't shock me that if, you know, you get four go, unless you count Robinson as an edge, you get four or five go in the first round, and then you only get a couple go in the second round, and then you're going to get more in the third. You know, I just don't see the quality. I like Isaac. And if they took him in the third round, would I be upset? No. If they had a second round, they took him, that might be a little bit of a reach for me.
I think,
but he's a good player. There's no question he's a good player.
I think he fits everything the Bears look for. He's got the long arms. He's pretty athletic. I didn't see – I always liked Chop Robinson a lot more when I watched the tape. I do think – my problem with Isaac is he's probably going to go overdrafted because, like Greg said, there's – a few DEs in the first round, and then after that, the talent drops off. So I probably think Isaac is going to get pushed up to the second round because he plays a premium position. He'll probably go somewhere in the second, and if that happens, there's no value. If Greg is right and he falls to the third round, that's a guy I really love that. If you can get a wide receiver or an offensive tackle in the first and come away with Isaac in the third, hey, that's a win-win. I just don't. Because guys who are athletic.
Yeah, I mean, we you know what? I X over the weekend, I said, no matter what happens, there's going to be somebody pissed off. just the way it's going to be. And the problem is that if, let's say, they trade down and they pick up another third, they're going to be pissed off because they're not going to know until 2 hours into the draft Friday night, or maybe a little more than 2 hours into the draft, 3 hours into the draft Friday night, who the hell they get with the thirds. And so they're just going to be pissing and moaning for like a freaking day and a half.
I've heard that. But they're already like, you want to pass up on a blue chip prospect? And it's like, when you go from 9 to 12, Greg said it a million times. You don't know how many blue chip prospects are on the Bears board, and especially with other positions like cornerback that could get drafted, that should get drafted really high. And we're not taking a corner. Let other teams come up and take those corners. I think we can still get a blue chip guy by trading back a couple of picks. It just can't move down really far. And I think that's pretty right. Common.
Enough. I think people come up for tackle and corner. People are going to move up for,
or possibly edge. Yeah.
And you know, depends who's there at wide receiver. Let's say Adunze's there at nine. Somebody might want somebody. Hey, I want that guy.
Hey, you're going to have to overpay then. Cause I want Adunze.
No, I get it. I get it.
People in the
chat. Don't think it's gonna, go ahead.
I was just going to say, people in the chat are with the strong endorsement from Swift and Mr. Shorty are off to go see the Pivot and the Caleb Williams interview. And I think I'll do the same this afternoon. Guys, great information. You know, I really enjoyed this. The only thing that would have made it better was drinking a beer and having it in the afternoon as opposed to the morning. Just listening to you guys go back and forth on these prospects has just been fascinating. Swift, anything you want to plug before we pull the plug?
No, I'll just say one final thing here. I know guys have said we probably don't like taking a wide receiver that high, especially with this year's stat class. I just want to make one final point. We haven't had a quarterback in my lifetime, but we really haven't had wide receivers either. It kind of goes hand in hand. So, yes, we have DJ Moore and Keenan Allen, but I do want more wide receiver talent. It doesn't have to come in the top 10 because this class is stacked. So we can get one in the third or fourth round. But I do want to continue adding weapons. I don't want to see guys like Tyler Scott and Colin Johnson and Equanimeous St. Brown and Dante Pettis being our starting receivers like we have over the last couple of years. Yes, teams can do it without receivers, but this class is so stacked. Let's take advantage of it and at least get a wide receiver at some point because we're getting the quarterback. We know that. We have two really, really talented receivers. So, Caleb, I won't argue if we don't get a receiver, but considering the position we're in with this draft class and how stacked it is at the receiver position, Ryan Poles, at least add one in this draft. That's all I want to say. And other than that, guys, we're all excited. I think that's a lot. Draft. The draft is coming, and Greg,
you know, put it this way, Swifty, I look at it this way. If he wasn't going to take a receiver at some point, he would have already signed a vet.
Mm-hmm.
And he
wouldn't have brought in so many guys.
And so I think it's a lock. He's going to take one. It's where does he take him?
I would love to see a blue chip quality wide receiver to grow with Caleb and be with Caleb for the next, you know, 4 to 10 years. That to me makes sense. The possibility of Keenan Allen getting an extension, I think, is not going to happen.
Maybe a 1 year or something, but not a long term. No, he's 32. Like
right, and I doubt Keenan's going to want a 1 year. Two. Yeah.
No, I would say 2 years and that's it. But hey, we got to see how it plays out.
Exactly.
I'd love all to right. have here 2 years on a value, though. But other than that, hey, Greg, it was an honor to talk to you. Been wanting to do that for a long time. Also, whoa. Thank you for having me on. He threw the phone at me. He said, you know what, Smith?
No, hey. The phone at
you. Oh, man.
No, the phone fell. No, hey, thanks for coming on. Really appreciate it. It was great. No, this was a fun show.
Mm-hmm. You know, for sure.
We should do it again for sure.
Anytime. Just hit me up.
All right. Make sure you follow us, Swift Sports Network on YouTube, and we'll be back with more programming tonight. We got a Sox show and then more Bear stuff tomorrow and the rest of the
week. And I'll be back Friday.
Exactly. Bye-bye.
See you later. We'll be right back.